Through a Scottish Prism, the programme that is unapologetically pro-Scottish independence and anti-Westminster rule. Everything we say here is viewed through a Scottish prism. Brought to you by Barhead Boy.
Sorry to miss you last week. As you know, we didn't bother with the show. Because conference was on and we thought most of our listeners would either be at the conference or certainly following it rather than listening to us. So it's been 2 weeks since I spoke to you, so therefore that means it's 2 weeks closer to independence, and that's why we're here. But I've got a special for you today. I have to tell you right away, we will not be having a Sunday interview, but instead, Through a Scottish Prism is going special today. There's only one subject in town, and there's only one topic in town, so I have brought in two of the finest experts on it to help me, two of my old compadres and fellow bloggers, to have a discussion on the week's events and what's happened over the last 7 days. And I'm delighted to tell you that my two guests today with me are Peter Bell and Jason Michaels. Good afternoon, gentlemen. How are we?
Good afternoon.
Jason. Peter.
Afternoon. Sorry.
Thanks. I'm glad you could join me, guys. So it's all been kicking off. So it's been a busy week or so, has it not? Peter, what do you think about it all?
All of it?
Well, if you go back to you were at conference, unfortunately, Jason. Neither Jason nor I managed to get to conference. How did you find the conference, Peter?
SNP conferences are always a wonderful experience. It's very much democracy in action. You've got a couple of thousand delegates seriously discussing policy and the internal operations of the party, trying to make the party more inclusive and more democratic, discussing motions on serious topics. It's always excellent. And yeah, you're always meeting old friends and making new friends. It's a social experience as much as anything. The one low point for me was the leader's address to the party, Nicola Sturgeon's speech, which it didn't quite satisfy me.
Yeah, I read your blog. I could tell that. Do you want to expand upon that a wee bit?
Well, it's just that I was looking for a little more from Nicola Sturgeon. I was looking for some sort of hint at some sense of urgency. And when she spoke that line about never mind the when of independence, it's the why that matters. I immediately thought, well, hang on a minute, this is sounding very much like a politician who's rather out of touch, because the when of independence is crucial. The when of a referendum is crucial, and it's a major topic of discussion in the Yes movement. I go around the country talking to people in all manner of places, and it's the thing that everybody's talking about. So for Nicola Sturgeon to dismiss it like that was a wee bit of a slap in the face. And the other thing was I would hope she would make some reference to the Yes movement, some acknowledgement of what the Yes movement doing. The conference came in the wake of some serious events. The two marches, one in Glasgow, Dumfries, both of which were record-breaking and impressive in many, many ways. And there was no acknowledgement of that at all. And there was the gathering in Stirling as well, which shows that we don't just march, we can sit down and do a hard day's graft on policy as well.
Yeah.
These things were just not acknowledged, and I was a bit disappointed about that. I have to stress, sorry to go on, but I have to stress that most of Nicola's speech was as excellent as ever. I just have these two little niggles with it. And whether you consider them serious niggles or not is very much a matter of personal opinion.
Well, I would say you gave a mild chastising, I would think would be the best way of putting it, Peter.
Far be it from me, Roddy. It's not my place.
Jason, what about you? What did you make of the conference that you saw and caught up on?
Well, I did my best to stay abreast of most of it. Thank goodness for YouTube and the various videos people were sharing. And I could only completely agree with Peter. I read Peter's blog. I loved the mild chastisement. I think that we have now, this wasn't clear at conference, but what became clear with the EU withdrawal bill and what became clear then with immediately afterwards with the walkout was that there is a question of urgency here. Mm-hmm. In fact, that urgency is actually, I think that's really the only game in town right now.
Well, for sure. My
thoughts on the walkout was, my immediate thought was when this happened, the reaction on social media and the reaction around dinner tables and coffee shops around Scotland was such that it showed there was something ready to be let out of the box, if only it would be given permission. And when that 24 hours of permission was granted, we got to see a hyperactivity in the movement. We got to see, you know, a colossal response to the sign up to the SNP, ramping up the numbers. People are now waiting for a starting gun. And I think Nicola Sturgeon's failure to recognise that at conference, or at least acknowledge it at conference, I don't know, causes me a little bit of worry at this point.
Yeah, there's obviously a strategy that we are, certainly the three of us are not, we're not au fait with what something has been decided. It was almost as if trying to avoid at all costs, you know, don't talk about the war type speech. Brilliant as it was, and of course at the conference we also got our new deputy leaders, which we'll come back to perhaps and have a chat about that later. But as you've moved us on to the UK withdrawal bill, that old phrase of Harold Wilson's, a week's a long time in politics, but it would turn out that 3 days was a long time in politics. What was your immediate reaction, Peter, when you heard that the government had given 15 minutes and ignored us and didn't let a Scottish minister, a Scottish MP talk and just steamrolled this through? What was your thoughts at the time?
Oh, I was totally unsurprised at the behaviour of the British government. I mean, this is standard practice, excluding our elected representatives is standard practice for them now. So I really wasn't expecting very much more from them. The walkout, on the other hand, was a brilliant stroke. I utterly reject the idea that it was planned for various reasons. I mean, yep. John Pickle would have had to be in on it, and why would they plan on a walkout when they were actually being given what they wanted? None of it. The whole pre-planned thing doesn't make any sense. But when I first heard that they'd all walked out, I to the extent that I'm able, I leapt from my chair. It wasn't much of a leap, and it was, yes, you know, this is what we need. This is what we crave in the Yes movement. This is what we've been asking from the SNP for weeks and months now. Yeah, some action.
A little bit of militancy.
It also gives me another one of my little "I told you so" moments, because I've always insisted that where the SNP led, the Yes movement would fall. Mm-hmm. That if the SNP, if the government, our government, our ministers, our MSPs and our MPs and our MEPs, if they gave a lead, if they did something, the Yes movement would react positively and go with them on it. And I get to say, "I told you so," because in just a small way, a relatively small way, the walkout has produced precisely that effect. Mm-hmm. The SNP were seen to do something, they were seen to act, and the Yes movement and the people of Scotland, voters in Scotland, responded immediately and responded mm-hmm. favourably. Well over 5,000 new members for the SNP.
It's incredible.
Within a matter of years. That's amazing. And the social media stuff was incredible as well. Mm-hmm. My point here, Laurie, and excuse me, Jason, for going on a bit. My point here is that we have a lot of people talking about when is the right time to call a referendum. And my perspective, my attitude is that we make it the right time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Whatever time it's called, we make it the right time. And I have always maintained that when Nicola Sturgeon calls that referendum, the Yes movement will respond by making it the right time.
Mm-hmm.
We will just we will come out all in force and make it the right time. So she doesn't have to worry about that. She doesn't have to worry about finding the right time. She doesn't have to worry about looking for signs and studying the polls and all the rest of it. Whatever time she chooses, the Yes movement is going to be there for her.
Yeah, there is no perfect time. It's like, you know, the perfect time will start a family, perfect time I'll move house. There's no such thing as a perfect time. You have to eventually throw the dice, don't you, Jason?
Oh, absolutely. Just to, completely agree with Peter again here. The only thing I would add in terms of the walkout is I believe there was something planned about it, but it wasn't planned on the SNP benches. I think the events which led up to it showed a clear orchestration and a premeditation on the part of the British state. This was a set piece manoeuvre, which again has become typical of the British government to ensure that Scottish representatives have absolutely no input, especially when that input is crucial to the importance of the functioning of Scottish democracy. Mm-hmm. It means, in effect, when we are sitting in Westminster, a chamber with 650 seats, that Scotland occupies less than 10% of those seats. So even in a good day, the Scottish opinion, the Scottish agenda will only be met when it matches that of a significant portion of the English sentiment in the House.
Mm-hmm.
It means now that when we are so fundamentally at odds with the demands of the English parliamentarians and the English electorate and indeed with the British state,
mm-hmm.
that we do not have a snowball's chance in hell of being heard or any of Scotland's concerns being understood, let alone met, in Westminster.
Mm-hmm.
This is why I wrote immediate aftermath of the walkout that Westminster has served its purpose for Scotland. I really believe that there is nothing more that we can achieve for Scotland in Westminster.
Mm-hmm.
So when this whole drama played out, again, Peter is right on the money there. We were waiting for that to happen. In fact, I was waiting for Nicola to give the starting gun. And of course, Peter wrote in his blog that any reasonable person wasn't going to assume that she'd announce a date. And what I took from that was that I'm definitely not a reasonable person. I was waiting in Nicola to say, here's the date on the calendar, get ready to roll, boys. It never happened, and I felt a little dejected.
Hmm. Well, I was hoping that she would even maybe have given us the following triggers will make me go, or anything, any kind of insight into it. But, I wrote in a blog, what we have to do, we always dance around it because they keep throwing up this thing that we're racist and we're anti-English. But I think it has to be called out now, and I said it in my blog this week. It is the English Parliament, and we are treated like a colony, and that's my opinion. Nothing's going to change it. It is not a UK Parliament. It's not a British Parliament. The Celtic fringe is ignored, and that's the fact.
Well, I mean, look, that's not in dispute. We can treat that almost scientifically, mathematically. Westminster is an English Parliament. When you add the other component parts, Northern Ireland, Wales, Scotland together, we don't meet 50%. English seats alone account for 84% of that parliament.
Yep.
So when England's sovereign will is expressed by, you know, even 50% of English MPs, then that's Scotland, Northern Ireland and Wales already on a losing footing. So it becomes mathematically impossible for it to be a representative parliament of a united kingdom. This is a representative parliament of the sovereign will of Greater England. And that's not racist. That is just the simple mathematics of the mechanisms of Westminster. And this has always been the case. So I don't think we should shy at any stage from firmly stating that this is the creature we're dealing with.
Well, I agree. That's what I'm saying. We have to say it now. We've always been, you know, we don't want to upset people, you know, all this whole Corcani and all that. But it has to be called out and shown for what it is, because that's what this week, above all else, is shown. But the ludicrous thing, if you like, or the irony of all this, is that the Scottish National Party, the Scottish government, are fighting tooth and nail to defend devolution, to keep Scotland in the Union, for want of a better phrase. Whereas it would seem that the Conservative Party are doing everything in their power to end the Union and force independence. It's a crazy old, it's a crazy old world we're living in at the moment.
I mean, I mean, on that part, I would just, on a little part, disagree that I don't think that the Tories, I think the effect that they're having is forcing independence.
Well, that's, I don't mean they're doing it on purpose.
Oh, but
by default, they're helping the case of independence more than the SNP trying to defend devolution, is my point.
Well, yeah, of course. And I mean, this is something I'd like to get Peter's opinion on whilst I've got him here, is my suspicion. I suspect, you know, very deeply right now that the project of Brexit, in order for it to be a success after the final closing of the Article 50 negotiations, will require the absolute political and democratic subjugation of Scotland. Scotland cannot be allowed. Scotland cannot be allowed the same level of autonomy, if we can even call that autonomy and devolution, that it has now, considering the thorn in the side it has become. England, you know, England requires it requires its oldest colony right now in order to be solvent. I don't think England's looking out towards trade partners like the United States or India, who are now beginning to turn away from it. I don't think England's looking out at these foreign trade partners with much hope unless it has its hands on Scotland's resources. And that requires probably a deliberate targeting now of the Holyrood Parliament as soon as Brexit is finished.
Peter?
Yes, that is the case. The British state, the UK, is systemically incapable of representing Scotland's interests. And this wasn't so much of a problem until Scotland's interests actually found a voice, which they have done because of devolution. But I think it's a mistake to say that the SNP are defending devolution. What they are actually defending is the Scottish Parliament. They're not much interested in defending devolution. It's just that the two go together. In order to defend one, you must defend the other. So it's the Scottish Parliament that the SNP are seeking to defend, and it's the Scottish Parliament that the British state is determined to kill or cripple. The Scottish Parliament's fate was sealed in 2007 when the people of Scotland took control of that Parliament out of the hands of the British parties and gave it to the SNP. And then in September of 2007, Alex Salmond got rid of the Scottish executive designation and gave us the first democratically elected Scottish government, real Scottish government ever in all of history. That was a significant thing. 2007 was a very significant year. The British establishment looked at that with horror. They saw this all slipping out of control, and they decided there and then that this had to be sought. The Scottish Parliament had to be reined in, and they've sought to do this ever since. Just that Brexit has provided an ideal opportunity for doing it, and they are taking full advantage of that opportunity. They will destroy our Parliament.
They absolutely have to. They cannot possibly do
what they claim they want to do post Brexit. I heard you use the word successful Brexit. I wouldn't know what that creature looks like, but they won't know. They won't be able to do any of the things that they want to do post Brexit, so long as the Scottish Parliament remains, and so long as the SNP remains in power. So they have to resolve that, and they have to resolve it as a matter of urgency. And there we go. We're back to that word urgency again. The threat to our Parliament is real. The threat to our democracy is real. That threat is imminent, and it must be dealt with as a matter of urgency.
Well, this go on, Roddy.
No, on you go, Jason. I was just going about to say, go on, Jason. What do you? I was just going to bring you in there.
Well, this was exactly my thinking. When we're reacting with the rest of Scotland on social media and the amount of disagreement we get, it's very easy to start second guessing yourself. And, you know, I spend a lot of the time thinking that maybe I'm the only idiot in the mix. So when I begin to have thoughts of my own, I, you know, before airing them in public, I think to myself, am I going to sound crazy? Which invariably I probably do. But that was my thinking behind the targeting of the Scottish Parliament. Was if we treat this as a game, you know, some sort of strategy, a geopolitical strategy game, the next logical move, you know, this sort of Kasparov next move of the Westminster Parliament has to be the neutralisation of Scottish democracy. Yeah. We are the only significant part, a component within the mechanism of the UK that can now scupper, quote unquote, a successful Brexit. And by that, I mean the Brexit the Tories or the Uber Tories want right now. The only way ahead for that is to destroy the Scottish Parliament. I'm incapable of thinking a way that the British ruling establishment can now imagine a Brexit going the way they want it and somehow magically ignoring Scotland. No, I think Scotland, I